to you, or
yeah, kid. We'll put this ball in your court.
I think I'll just take on the show. You know, don't know how.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you can do. You go. Okay. You take care of the wifey and everything. See, baby Grace.
Okay. I think probably Kate would appreciate that more. I mean, she loves you, kid. She really does.
It's a really calming influence.
Yeah, well, that's, just breathe. But yes, breathe. Yeah, it's really not that difficult for us. I mean, kid, I mean, Kate, I can't say it's not difficult for her, but for us, it's we kind of stand there, right, and cheer them on. You know what I mean? Pom-poms and the whole gig. But I think probably Kate would approve of me going to the hospital with her. So I think Kid will probably have to take over the show.
Huh. Well, you know, Kid, it's not that hard, by the way. I've seen plenty of movies. You know, it's just like, you do those breathing techniques over and over, and then everything will be fine. It's not like it used to be. It used to be in the movies that you had to go get hot water and a bunch of clean towels, and that's all it took. that's what cinema
that's
told us
now.
For like 75 years, that you just needed a bowl of hot water and some clean towels, and you could deliver a baby. It's a little harder now. You also have to help them, breathe. Apparently, that's a big part of it all. So, anyway,
good luck with that one, kid. I'll go ahead and do the daddy duty, kid. You're gonna have to step up and co-host with Chuck if it happens to go down during the show.
All right. Well, I wish we would have discussed that beforehand. Maybe I would have planned things a little differently. So, fine. Baby,
I gotta adapt and overcome, Chuck. Yeah, gotta adapt and overcome.
Welcome to the Grace and Bucky show, I guess. You know, yeah.
And she's we're running things around here.
Yeah, uh-huh. So she's making all the rules. You know, might as well put her name first on the show. I guess that's the way it's gonna work. coming up later on, we got the Ocho at 8 o'clock today, your 8 top stories of the day. Also, we're going to talk a little hockey today with our own Ian Furness. We are at the month mark. We are a month away from the Kraken and their expansion draft, and we don't even have a head coach yet. So we'll chat with Ian about that today at 9:30. But we have to talk about these Mariners, Bucky. The kids swept the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. And that's no chump. I mean, that's a team that is defending its American League crown. That was a team that was in first place in the mighty, mighty American League East when that series started. They're not anymore. The Mariners stole that from them, too. So the M's suddenly are playing really good baseball and very exciting baseball as well. And we're seeing some of these young players just as we knew we would at some point. We're seeing some of these young players start to get comfortable in the league, starting to get comfortable with the spotlight on them. And frankly, it's a couple of guys, Bucky, from Shed Long to Jake Fraley, who, by the way, stubbed their toes their first times in the major leagues. Did not look like they belonged. Took a little time away and now are coming back and are contributing. I'm not saying they're starring, but they're contributing, and Long had the big hit yesterday, and Fraley made the big defensive play, and we're seeing a lot of these examples, and I would just say that I think we're going to see the same thing of Krim Kelnick when he gets his shot again, and I think Evan White will be better when the time is right to bring him back to this major league roster. So this is it. This is the growth. This is the ebb and flow. This is the inconsistency. This is how hard it is to transition to the biggest stage in professional baseball and have to face the best pitchers in the world. It's not easy, as you can attest to, Bucky, and these kids did not do it, a lot of them, very well the first time around, but they look a lot better this second time around.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Shed and Fraley, right? I mean, they both struggled mightily last year. I mean, Fraley's kind of never really had a whole bunch of consistent ABs. He always seems he's gotten hurt a couple different times and kind of just stopped him right in his tracks. But I mean, JP Crawford's another guy. Jake Bowers, yeah. Right, we just got him, and that's, you know, short sample size, 10-11 games, whatever he's played so far, but
looks
he
good.
Obviously the change of scenery, he looks like that he can play at this level. That I mean, I've said it many times that there was times when I was in the minor leagues 3-4 years before I finally got my chance to play, and I thought that I was ready. And ultimately, I think that I wasn't ready. I mean, to some degree, I most certainly would have had some struggles It's just for young guys to come up and hit the ground running is, that's not the norm. I mean, yes, there is a few studs out there that do. I mean, the Juan Soto's of the world or Acuna's, you know, you've mentioned those guys many times before. Those guys come up and then they just, oh, it's just baseball. That's just what I do. And they just kind of hit the ground running. More often than not, if you're young, especially if you're 21, 22 years old and you get to the big leagues, that's a bunch of grown men out there that know exactly what it is that they have to do to get guys out. And it just basically boils down to if you have a hole in your swing, or you have something about your approach that isn't right, like maybe you're really too patient or you're too aggressive, whatever it might be, the guys at the highest level know how to pick that stuff apart. And I think it's just you have to kind of go through that once or twice and kind of realize, oh boy, I got to make some adjustments. I got to continue to adjust and adapt to this game. Otherwise, the game is going to blow me away. And unfortunately, we've seen that with some of the young guys that have came up with the Mariners. But it's also been some other guys. I mean, Ty France was a guy that didn't stick in San Diego. And then he's heating up right now. And hopefully, his wrist is okay. But J.P. Crawford was obviously a huge prospect and then was given up on, you know, because he hadn't shown that he could do it at the highest level. Right now, he's about the hottest hitter in baseball. So I like this whole part of the thing. Now, obviously, growth is one thing. Then you got to grow and then stick. You know what I mean? Grow to a certain place, and then that's the player that you are. And then the inconsistencies will kind of diminish a little bit. And at this point, I'm just enjoying watching the growth of these guys. And now, all of a sudden, whatever they grow into, if they can stick at that type of a player, you're going to have some fun kids to watch for coming years.
And I'll tell you this. I think that one of the most difficult things for an executive in this sport is that decision, Bucky, of when a player is ready, when you do call them up. And you look like a genius if they hit the ground running. But then again, maybe not. You know, I mean, as Jerry pointed out when discussing Kelnick, if he would have come up and hit 400 instead of 096, then I would have been criticized for keeping him down in the minors too long, that he was clearly ready. And so I don't even know if an executive gets a pass when the guy comes up and hits the ground running. You know, people still find ways to criticize. And it's a difficult decision to make, because that player could be ready and then had a couple of bad games or whatever the case might be, got inside his own head. Next thing you know, I'm battling myself more than I'm even battling major league pitching, and that combination can be lethal. But every executive goes through this, and more often than not, they're criticized for whatever decision they make in terms of when to activate a guy and when not. And Jerry's job's a little more difficult because his entire organizational future is based on these young players and developing them right way and not overwhelming them when they get the call up to the majors and giving them more than one chance. I mean, this is the game. And right now, I mean, because of what happened to Jared Kelnick, I think he's scared to bring up Cal Raleigh. You know, he doesn't want the same thing to happen to Cal Raleigh, even though Cal Raleigh is owning Tacoma right now. He's owning the minor leagues at this point. And so this little game that executives have to play of when to press that button at the exact right time and to get the results that you're hoping to see with immediacy to keep the fan base satisfied, man, that's a difficult, difficult task. And you get it wrong almost every single time, and people need to be aware of that.
Yeah, you get it wrong, or you get it, it's perceived that you got it wrong regardless of what you do. I think that for the most part, GMs, I would have to think that they have some fairly tough skin, right? Fairly thick skin, because you, no matter what you do, you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It really boils down to, especially when it comes to the youngsters, right? Or when you're in the middle of a rebuild, it comes down to you kind of have to be patient. Not just patient with when you call them up, but then also patient in understanding, okay, I can't just give up on guys. If I call them up and in their first 10 games they just aren't getting it done, I got to give them some time to kind of go through those growing pains and learn from their mistakes. If it continues, then all of a sudden I have to send them down and still make sure that they understand that that isn't me losing patience or that isn't me casting judgment. It's just part of the process. And I think that he's pretty good at doing that for the most part. outside of our market, outside of Seattle, I would have to think most people are looking at Jerry DePoto and thinking, wow, he's doing a great job.
They you know are. What I mean?
Because they're not just looking at the little tiny things and judging every single move here and there based on what they read and what they hear. I think that, yeah, most people outside of here are like, he's doing a masterful job at this point in time.
Oh, I mean, rave reviews. Absolutely rave reviews. And yet, you know, because, and look, I mean, I understand the 40 years of frustration, but the 40 years of frustration have brought, you know, the first inclination is to think negatively, is to find what's wrong with the situation. And so,
yep.
You know, and that's what Jerry confronts. I mean, I still feel kind of bad. I kind of feel like we ambushed him when we had him on the airwaves because, you know, I think he listens. I think that he knows that we've been supporting his cause, and all we did was ask critical questions because we wanted to represent not the Chuck and Bucky thoughts on what's happening with the rebuild, but I kind of felt compelled, and I got the impression you did as well, to ask the questions that our critics wanted us to ask of Jerry. And so that's what we did last week, and I think he kind of left that feeling like, man, am I going to catch a break in this market? But I'm here to repeat. I think it's been a remarkable rebuild. I don't defend everything that Jerry has done to this point in the process, but since the rebuild, I don't know if you could have done it better, frankly, and I don't quite understand the just perpetual glass half empty approach to what we're seeing on the field this year.
Well, it just is. I mean, it is the 40 years, or you know, the 40 years of not being a real World Series contender. You've had a couple little seasons sprinkled in there that were great, but for the most part, then it goes back to mediocrity or worse. And the thing that I don't get is, why is he blamed for it? Like, why are we holding his feet to the fire over it? I mean, he hasn't been doing the whole thing. As a matter of fact, I don't even want to place a lot of the blame from previous GMs, because you do end up inheriting your first couple years as GM. You inherit a team that somebody else built. And so, to some degree, people give somebody a free pass. I wouldn't necessarily give him a free pass on that, but I would say I'm not going to hold him 100% liable for the shortcomings of the teams that he received, and he had to play with some of those contracts and the minor league system that was depleted. He had to deal with that. He had to try to put a product on the field after somebody else had made the soup or bought the ingredients. So to me, I don't really understand. I know it just has to do with the long term, you know, failure of the organization, and people just don't have any more patience left. To that, I just say, well, you know, and I'm sure it's the same thing Jerry would say. That's why I wanted to ask the questions that were somewhat on the other side of things versus just asking what we already think we know about the organization, right, or we believe in. I wanted to give him the opportunity to just straight from the horse's mouth tell them, hey, it's going the way that we want it to go. Yeah, you can look at things like Jared Kelnick is our prize prospect and number three prospect and all baseball or four prospect, whatever he is, and him coming up and hitting less than 100. You can look at that as a failure if you want. I'm not going to look at it as a failure. I'm going to look at it as a learning experience for a young kid that thought he had everything figured out, and as of right now, he realizes he doesn't have everything figured out. And to me, that's not a bad thing necessarily. It would have been great for him to come up and hit 350. Yeah, it would have been awesome. But to me, he would have eventually had to have a slice of humble pie and realize, wow, this game's really hard at the highest level. And he got that. He got a big spoonful of that. And now all of a sudden, he's going to have to figure out, okay, how do I rebound from it? If he rebounds from it, he'll be better because of that poor start. And I just wanted to give Jerry the opportunity to basically say the same things that we've been saying. And I don't know. He might have felt ambushed a little bit, but for the most part, I have to think that he knows that we're on board with the rebuild and the way that he's been doing things so far.
I'll just say this. I said this Friday, and I think it's worth repeating on Monday at 7 o'clock. I said it Friday at 9:40, so I'll repeat it at 7:15. You have absolutely every right as a Mariner fan to take this. I'll believe it when I see it approach. I mean, you know, you want to do that. And by the way, when this thing does work and you want to jump back on the bandwagon, you'll be welcome. I guarantee you the Mariners won't turn you away at the ticket office, okay? So, okay, you know, you can jump back on the bandwagon. You've earned that. All the years of frustration, you've earned that. You've earned I'll believe it when I see it approach. Fine. That's the approach you want to take. Just don't take the approach that the rebuild is failing again or has failed. or all we do is rebuild. Because all of those things are wrong. They're just wrong. You know, you haven't been constantly rebuilding. Jerry DePoto has not been rebuilding since he got to the Mariners. As a matter of fact, he inherited one of the oldest teams in baseball and tried to win with it the first 3 years. Even though I think his better judgment was, this team's not good enough, and I would like to start rebuilding it. But he couldn't, because he had Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano at the heart of his roster. And so if you've taken the approach that the rebuild has failed, or the rebuild is failing, or all we ever do is rebuild, then you're wrong. So, you know, that's just the bottom line. You're entitled to take a I'll believe it when I see it approach. But any analysis that the rebuild has been a disaster is just flat out false. And so we'll leave it at that. Bucky, here we are with a 4-game winning streak right now and playing 2 games over 500 baseball. And, you know, we're still not healthy at this point, but a little healthier than what we were with, you know, Marcos kind of being back at this point, and hopefully Ty France is going to stay in the lineup. And yet a major sea change could occur today. And, you know, I'm not so naive that I don't think that Mariner pitchers have been doctoring the baseball like every most every pitcher in Major League Baseball, using some sort of tacky substance to help with their spin rate. So today the rule gets implemented, and pitchers are going to start getting checked. Some pitchers have already started throwing dry baseballs, if you will, that you were using the sticky stuff recently. I don't know how many Mariner pitchers had been using it. I don't know how many Mariner pitchers are going to be off the juice as of today, if you will. But there's the potential to see some interesting results today going forward and for the rest of the year based on baseball eliminating spider tack and other substances to help pitchers grip.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it works just overall, right? I mean, I'll be watching the Mariners and seeing if there's somebody that falls off here and there. There's no doubt about that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have, you know, if they have some that have been using it to some extent. Now, I'm also not naive enough to think that for 1 second that there isn't going to be some guys that just flat out are going to be like, whatever. Okay, maybe I won't use spider tack, but if you think I'm not going to do sunscreen and rosin or something along those lines, I mean, when I was playing, right at the end of my career is when they basically first started testing for steroids. And yet, there still is guys taking steroids to this day. I mean, you make it more illegal, you make the punishment more strict or more harsh, and yeah, you're going to eliminate some people that would have maybe been on the fence, like, I kind of want to do this. This is something to me, a 10-game suspension for a pitcher. Now, for a relief pitcher, what is that, maybe 3 or 4 times that they would have got in the game, you think? Or a starting pitcher, it's one start, maybe 2 starts, and they're still going to be getting paid for it. I think that you're going to have
10 if it's Misevich.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's true. He pitches just about every single game. I mean, I think there's going to be some guys that maybe were, you know, dabbling in it a little bit. They're just going to be like, okay, I don't want the stigma that comes along with getting caught, right? Once they're going to start checking, umpires are actually going to come out and, I don't know, I guess shake their hand and see if they were sticky or something. I don't know how they're going to necessarily do it. But I think there's some guys that will say, I don't want to do that. I think there's other guys that are going to say, I don't care. I'm here, and this money that I'm making right now, I'm going to push the envelope a little bit and just hope that I don't get caught.
Pitchers do not like even having people talk to them. And they don't like umpires during games. I can't imagine what's going to happen when a couple umpires, after a bad inning, step over to them and try to check their gloves and their hands. And if they spend too much time like a TSA authority, and get out the rubber glove, I don't know what this is going to lead to, but I have a feeling there's going to be some anger. There's going to be some video of this experience that we will pour over, I have a feeling, for years to come. So there are a lot of effects to this, not to mention the injury, possible injury effect for guys that are going to try to quit this thing cold turkey. We've already seen it a couple of times in Major League Baseball. So I'm not sure what to expect today and going forward for the rest of the year, but I'm a little nervous about it. All right, coming up next, it's the first day of summer. We're already smack dab in the middle of our summer school lessons, and we'll continue them right here on Chuck and Buck Sports Radio 950 KJ.
And one out.
Today is the first official day of summer, but I don't want to hear from you kids mumbling, well, why have we been going to summer school all this time for days now? Getting handed all these assignments from this jackass teacher of ours when it's not even summertime yet.
Yeah, we were going to summer school while we were still in regular school. That's kind of crap.
Yeah, it was still spring and you were going to summer school. So, sorry about it. I don't make the rules. Take it up with the school board, I suppose. I just get paid to teach these criminals, Bucky and Christopher Kidd, on a daily basis. So, good boys and girls get summer vacation. Bad boys and girls get summer school. And so every day, bad kids, Bucky and Christopher Kidd, get lessons from me from the sports world. Don't care if they agree. Don't care if their parents disagree. Again, go see the school commissioner if you'd like. I'm just here to impart my wisdom. And you can take it and run with it if you like, or dispose of it. Doesn't matter. At the end of the day, there's a pop quiz on Thursday. And this week on Friday, kid, bring in a bundt cake to celebrate Bucky's baby. You know, let the whole class can share. And then, Bucky, I want some hockey haikus on Friday on how Ian Furness changed your life. So,
okay, you got it. Haikus. Let me write that down. Hockey haikus. Okay, good. I got it.
Those are your assignments for this week. Here are your lessons today, and I'm going to start with this lesson. And, Bucky, some people are crediting Kyle Schwarber for hitting 5 home runs in the last 2 days, and maybe the Washington Nationals have turned their season around. But that's not true. The truth of the matter is the Nationals have turned their season around because Gerardo Parra is back, and that means so is Baby Shark. Yeah!
Shark. Baby Shark.
Hey. I mean, it can't be a coincidence, right? I mean, the last time they were good, they won the World Series with Baby Shark Mania, and they've been terrible for the last year and a half. And then all of a sudden, Parra comes back, they start playing Baby Shark again, and they win. They do nothing but win. I'm telling you.
You know, I don't know what to say about this, to be honest. I saw that and thought immediately, okay, here comes Baby Shark again, right? And it worked a couple years ago. Shoot, went on to win the World Series. There's something about it. I mean, I don't know if we can credit the whole thing. That would be a little bit over the top. But there definitely is. That's it. That's 100%.
Yep.
I don't know about that. But I do know that there's something to it, man. And you can have guys like that. I mean, we've all played on teams. There's just somebody that keeps everybody loose. And he must be that guy that just kind of make sure that these guys go out there and play the game the way you're supposed to play the game, because it is, after all, a game, regardless of how much of a business it is.
Yeah, so he's there, and then he finally got it to play yesterday, so he got his first at bat, and he's mostly a pinch hitter, and he comes up and the place goes nuts. And Josh Harrison was not part of that team, I don't think, a couple of years ago. And Bucky, man, his face, he's watching this happen and his face just lights up. They're just having a ball with it. And sure enough, Parra, first pitch, lines it down the left field line for a double. Does a little Baby Shark thing to his teammates, and the place just goes absolutely crazy. So it's back, and don't be surprised if the Nationals don't go on a run. Also from summer school, Bucky, if the double play is the pitcher's best friend, then the triple play must be the pitcher's, notebook level
soulmate life.
That's right.
Yeah.
Soulmate. That's right. Yeah. I mean, the triple play is James Garner and that forgetful old lady at the end of Notebook.
Uh-huh.
That's the triple play to a pitcher right there.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know for sure how. I mean, I was never part of a triple play ever in my whole. Well, I mean, maybe in Little League or something like that, but never in pro baseball was ever a part of one of those. I saw one that happened to us, but you would think that they would happen more often, especially one of the ones they turned where it was the ground ball to third with guys at first and second. You just do the traditional way that you get a triple play. The other one was kind of unheard of, but I have no idea how the Yankees are pulling this kind of stuff out of there. You know what? I mean, what is that, 2 in 1 week? 2 triple plays in 1 week? That's pretty much unheard of.
3 for the year already, and then the third one is a walk-off. So they've already turned three triple plays this year. So, I mean, you can sort of make sense of the no-hitter barrage that's taken place because pitchers have been so dominant all season long to this point. Maybe not after today, but that sort of makes sense. Turning three triple plays in 2 months does not make sense. And yet, that's what the Yankees have done. So triple play magic continues. Another lesson for you to impart, and that is that, and this, feel free to disagree with this. Kevin Durant, this postseason, what he did was more impressive than what he did in Golden State winning championships.
Ooh, wow. Well, I mean, individually, I would probably agree with you on that. I mean, I don't know. The winning championships, how dominant that Golden State Warriors team was there for that little span of time was pretty impressive. But him, individually, what he did, I mean, he ended up falling short, but it was by no fault of his own. I mean, he was just going out there. It's weird how usually stuff like this kind of just gets swept under the rug or easily forgotten. Just from the standpoint of if you don't end up winning, you know, if you have some miraculous performance or an outstanding showing like he did in the last series, you know, just kind of taking the team on his back and doing amazing feats after amazing feat. I mean, it just does seem like it's something that kind of could get overlooked a little bit. But, I mean, to me, it was one of the better individual performances. It most certainly was one where he has to be able to look himself in the mirror and say, well, I did everything I could do. I mean, there was really nothing more I could do.
He did everything he could do. And I know it ended up coming up a little bit short, but he had 1.5 stars on his team that were available. A half of a star out of 2.
A half, yeah.
That was available to him, his teammates. He did everything he could do. I'm telling you. I mean, I never liked it. I'm with Charles Barkley. I don't really like the super team thing. I didn't necessarily like it when LeBron did it. I think that, you know, you finish the job that you start. And Kevin Durant tapped out of Oklahoma City, fine. But then he decided to join a team that was already the best team in the NBA. I wasn't all that impressed that he won 2 championships right with the Golden State Warriors. I was not impressed. Yeah. What I saw from Kevin Durant this postseason blew my mind. I mean, that was, Giannis is right. That is best basketball player in the world stuff. And I think that Kevin Durant will, if he's been fearful of being able to win this without putting himself on a super team, I think he knocked that fear just completely out of the water this postseason. I think he's going to be an animal next year. And if I were them, I'd get rid of Irving and Harden because I don't think they're champions. And I'd trade them both and bring in somebody that is a champion and then watch Kevin Durant soar.
That's just bring in a little bit more of a role player instead of having 3 chefs in the kitchen type of a thing. I mean, I thought that it could possibly work for 1 year where everybody just kind of puts their ego aside. And who knows, it might have if they wouldn't have had basically an injury and a half to that threesome that was the super duper team, in my opinion. But I mean, at this point, I'm with you. Kind of, hopefully, he just recognizes, like, I don't need a Batman or Robin. I am Batman. I can just do my own thing.
He just doesn't need a Justice League. He doesn't need 7 superheroes around him.
Right.
And
right.
I think that for whatever reason, he convinced himself that he did. And I hope that what he learned this postseason is, I damn near did this myself. And if I can just have a couple guys around me, good players to very good players that are dependable, I can do this myself. I'm that good. And so I hope Brooklyn doesn't stick with the trio. I hope that Kevin Durant leads a team to a championship next year without the other two. Finally, tomorrow is the NBA lottery. Here's your lesson. I don't care what people tell you. The NBA lottery is rigged. Write it down. There will be a pop quiz on Thursday for you to recall. All right, coming up next, we talk some golf. John Rahm is your U.S. Open champion, but was he the most interesting player on the course this weekend? We'll discuss it next. Sports Radio 950 KJ.